You're listening to Heritage Radio Network. HRN is food radio supported by you. Learn more at heritageradionetwork.org. This episode of Pizza Quest is brought to you by Central Milling. Hand-selected grain, expertly milled for passionate bakers. Visit centralmilling.com to learn more. Welcome to Pizza Quest. I'm Peter Reinhardt, and I'm here today with Kendall Vanderslice. We've got a very interesting and unique show for you today. As those of you who have been following, pardon me, the progression of our shows recently, we have expanded the scope of Pizza Quest to be as much about the quest as it is about the pizza. So I'm sure we'll touch a little bit on pizza today. But what we're really going to touch on is bread. And Kendall is the author of a new book just out called Buy Bread Alone. And so obviously from the title, it's a subject close to my heart. And unfortunately for me, I was invited by Kendall to write the foreword for the book. So I'm in the book a little bit, but it's really her story. And I'm going to let her tell us all about it in a second. Just to preface this, I want to read a couple of the sort of advance reviews, because this book, now most of you were watching, I've not even heard about the book yet because it's only just now out, right? Just come out. But we've got some great quotes from folks. I'll read one. It says, in this deeply personal account, baker theologian Kendall Vanderslice explores how baking bread can become a lens through which we understand the Eucharist anew and what it means to allow God to form our lives into a living sacrifice for the life of the world. Be moved, touched, and inspired as you journey with Kendall into the world of artisan bread, embodiment, and what it means to fully embrace your vocation. Well, that's a lot. And of course, listen, you got the perfect name for an author about bread. Kendall Vanderslice. This is not a pen name, right? This is your real name, right?
No, this is my true name. But people ask me all the time if I made up the name.
I know. It's like the most perfect pen name ever. Yeah.
Truly.
So, Kendall, tell us a little bit about your journey and how you came to write this book. We'll get into some of the deeper topics and issues that you cover in the book, but just a little background.
Yeah.
Well, the backstory.
You know, like you, I love bread and have always loved bread. From a really young age, I really loved bread. I went on a couple of field trips in elementary school to different bread bakeries. One was a very small local bread bakery and one was a large, like, commercial bakery. And I was just fascinated by the movements of the bakers, by kind of the smells, by everything about baking bread. And as I kind of was in middle school, high school, loved working in the kitchen, loved cooking, baking. So when it came time to figure out what I wanted to do with my life, I realized, oh, this thing I love doing, like, maybe that doesn't just have to be a hobby. It can be my career. Uh-huh. But as I got sort of into my work, I worked in bakeries and in the restaurant industry. And I would on Sundays go from kind of my work at the bakery to church on Sunday afternoon. And I would go and receive communion every single week with bread dough still stuck to my arms. And it started to get me kind of questioning, what does the bread that I bake on Sunday morning have to do with this bread that I'm eating in church on Sunday afternoon? And also, like, how does this bread that I bake connect me with kind of a whole, like, history of bakers? That this bread is not just, it's a deeply individual thing, but it's also kind of a very communal thing, that we have, humans have been eating bread forever, and that it's this thing that kind of connects us. And so I became super fascinated by the history of bread, kind of the culture around it, the actual science of bread baking, and kind of how bread itself provides a lens into kind of the larger world outside of just baking it.
Well, you really, in those words, pretty much have said exactly the message that I've been saying for many years, which is, you know, when you ask the question, and when I first did my first bread book, I was asked the question, what is it about bread that makes it so special? And you just answered that, you know, and because you've been sucked down the same rabbit hole as me, in a sense of spiritual, a good rabbit hole,
Yes.
that it's a fathomless subject and it works on so
Absolutely.
many different levels. And so I think by asking the question, what is it about this bread that makes it so unique and special? You have to encounter all these levels, which has led you on a kind of an interesting journey, I would say, because
Yeah.
as we said at the beginning, you're no not just a baker now, you are a theologian, and which I believe when you got your Doctor Divinity from Duke, was it at Duke?
A master's of theological studies at Duke.
Masters at Duke,
Yes.
and of course, the subtitle of your book, which is A Baker's Reflections on Hunger, Longing, and the Goodness of God. And I want to talk about those three aspects in particular, because really that's what the book's about. And the first one being the big one is hunger, hunger.
Yeah.
And so normally it would be like, the goodness of God, blah, 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 and hunger. But you start with
Hunger
hunger.
is at the
So
beginning.
hunger seems
Yeah.
like it's a recurring theme in your life. And again, another lens, another window through which you can approach this subject.
Yeah. Yeah. So when I talk about hunger in the book, I do feel the need to clarify that I'm like not talking about hunger as in lack of access to food, but rather hunger in just this deep longing for food and love of food. And hunger is in much of my life, I experienced a lot of shame around this idea of hunger, this like love of food, this desire to eat food and cook food and connect with people over food was always for me seen as this kind of something to be ashamed of. And so learning to see food as something good and joyful and delightful, but also something that can has this like power to pull me into relationship with other people. And I believe as a person of faith to pull me into relationship with God, that this hunger is not something to be ashamed of, but is actually this really beautiful gift that can teach us how to appreciate the joy of food and what food can do.
Yes, like, well, it kind of goes right to the subject of, breaking bread and communing on many
Absolutely.
levels, and hunger working on many levels, as you said. I think that's one of the fascinating things about bread from the get-go is that it's such so transparently works on many different levels,
Yes.
and I think that's why it's such a fascinating subject for so many people. And hunger is again another metaphor.
Yes.
We talk about bread as a metaphor. This book is really a book. It's a metaphoric journey through so many
Yes.
lenses, not just the lens of bread, but that lens opens up other lenses and deeper lenses.
Yes, absolutely. Yeah, and I think even this like the hunger can be a physical thing, like a hunger physically for food, but it also is kind of this hunger for connection, this hunger for belonging, this hunger for community. And I think we see that, like, for me, it is very literally kind of bread that has been the thing that has carried me on that journey. But also, I think I'm not the only one. If we look at kind of the height of the pandemic in 2020, everyone's desire to suddenly bake bread. I think there is something about it that like feeds that physical hunger, but also the making of it and the sharing it. It connects us on this like spiritual communal level that we can't even fully fathom.
When the pandemic hit, had you already finished writing the book, or were you in the middle of writing the book?
No, so I had actually just finished writing the proposal for the book, and I was like ready to, I started shopping it around to agents and to publishers and wasn't getting a lot of interest. I was getting a little bit of pushback of like, I don't know, people are still, like we've had this like diet conversation has said that bread is bad for so long that I don't think people want a book all about bread. And so that was kind of the pushback I got at that point. And then, I was wanting to hit on these themes of loneliness and community and bread. And then pandemic hit and I was like, oh my goodness, I'm just like watching my book live out right now. And so I set it aside for a little while and then came back to it a few months later. And it was a different story. Suddenly publishers were like, yes, people want to understand what happened. Why did everybody suddenly want to make bread?
If there was a the irony of that whole pandemic, as bad as it was, is
Yeah.
that where do people turn to first? They turn to bread
Yeah.
and to bread alone, by bread alone.
Were you surprised by that? I was not surprised. Were you surprised?
I was validated, I think,
Yes. Oh,
not
that's a good
surprised, but
word.
validated. I think that we've been talking to you and people like you and me, and I've known you for a number of years now. We've been talking about this among our small little, coterie of friends. We did a documentary film together, about the role of bread and the importance of bread. So it's not a surprise that the meaning is sort of getting out there, but it's interesting how it got out there and how all of a sudden the interest and the fact that so many people wanted to make bread at home and why they chose that, as opposed to, maybe they did other things like making pasta and making other things, but bread, there's something about bread. That's really what it comes down to. There's something about bread, which is why it's the main metaphor, the leading metaphor of this book, but it's not the only metaphor in this book. You mentioned yearning and longing, and I think that for me also is a key theme. I mean, you can't talk about one of these images without touching on all the others. So I think when we talk about communion, when we talk about coming together or through food and other things, it begs the question of what is it that we are longing for? What in your exploration and through the various chapters of the book and the meditations that you've sort of explore through this, what is it that you've seen? How would you explain what it is that people are longing for?
Yeah, I think we're longing for connection and belonging and some sense of something outside of ourselves. I think that like this awareness that our bodies matter, our connection to kind of the world, creation, the material world matter, like that matters. And also this like longing for something beyond ourselves that can sort of hold us when the world around us feels like it's falling apart. And I think that happens both in our connection to something as tangible and tactile as bread. It happens through our connection with other people where we feel this sense of belonging, and that happens as we eat bread. And then also this connection to kind of something outside of ourselves, like the spiritual, the spiritual realm in some way. And I believe that bread is, like in my own faith tradition, bread is the primary metaphor that God has given us to connect with God. And so I think there's something kind of spiritual, communal, and physical happening, that we are yearning for all of those things to come together in some way.
Yeah, it's like it's a an image that exists across all religious traditions. It is a central symbol, and it works on all, as we said, on many levels, from the literal. In one of my talks, I talk about the literal, the poetic or metaphorical, then the philosophical, and then the deepest level of all, which not everybody gets to or thinks about, or is willing to think about. But as a theologian, you must think about it, the deepest level being the mystical level, which again is divine union with our Creator. And so tell us a little bit about that theological journey that you've gone on, because you went to school, you bread took you to the seminary or to the university.
Yes. Well, and I mean, I have to give credit to you too that I think a lot of your writing is the first that like gave me the vision of even a possibility of thinking about bread on this theological, mystical level, that there even could be that seminary could be a place where I could think about bread.
It's so cool that it worked out that way. For me, it was the opposite. I started out in seminary and then stumbled into bread making and then
I love
somehow tried
it.
to put those pieces together. So I was like climbing up the rabbit hole while you were
Yes, like diving down
diving
deeper
into it.
into it. I love it. I'm for me, I am really interested in interested first in kind of the imagery that bread plays throughout the Bible, both in kind of the Hebrew texts that are shared among both the Jewish and Christian tradition, and then also in the New Testament, looking at kind of what bread is doing and how God is using bread to talk about kind of the world and God's relationship with us. I think that bread provides this image of both what in Christian tradition we would call kind of the brokenness and the goodness of creation, that God created this world, called it good, and food is this gift of God where we experience the deep goodness of the created world and our sort of relationships with others. And also in kind of the Genesis narrative, we have this kind of breakdown of creation that, Adam and Eve ate the fruit that they were not supposed to eat, and then everything falls apart. And food is this way of also experiencing kind of this brokenness, this pain that is the reality of this world that we live in, that that you know our eating can connect us to one another, but just as easily our eating can divide us from one another. You know, whether it's food allergies and who can't eat at the table with other people, or a kind of power dynamics of who is not welcome at the table with other people, or like political dynamics of how food is kind of wielded to keep some hungry and help other, you know, the like on all these different levels, food is this way that we experience the deep kind of aching of the world. And then also in kind of the Christian faith, this meal is something that signifies the healing as well, that Jesus gives us this meal as a reminder of Jesus' death and resurrection. And also I think as something that actually changes our relationships to one another, that when we eat together, it changes the way that we relate to one another. And so that's kind of been my theological journey looking at food and meals more broadly, but then bread specifically, also I think does so much that it's a meal of bread and wine specifically that we are offered. And it's bread that comes up as this image all throughout the story of scripture. And I think bread itself even holds those tensions of kind of the goodness and the brokenness, that bread is what sustains us and bread is what has sustained humanity for most of history, but also like the process of making bread is really, really hard. Like it's pretty easy for us now because we can go to the store and we can buy our flour and it's already ready and we can turn our oven to the temperature that we need. But for most of history, bread has been a very laborious process to, you know, grow wheat and harvest it, and all just those tensions are always at play in food, but bread specifically.
I mean, even just growing the wheat is, it's a life and death situation for so many people.
Absolutely.
And then to turn that wheat into flour and to turn that flour into bread, it's the series of transformations that take
Yes.
place that lends stuff. But, I've always found it interesting that the word companion, when broken down into its root, means one with whom you have broken bread, companhane, bread. So when you talk about who's welcome at the table, I mean, if you're breaking bread with somebody, you've welcomed each other, to the table. So what an apt image for that. The third part of this subtitle is it's hunger, longing, and the goodness of God. And I think that's the other thing that is under challenge today. I think that I just read in the paper today, how many young teenagers are despairing. They're experiencing an epidemic level of despair, and that despair really is essentially doubting the goodness of creation. Why, well, my existence is in question. So how does bread, well, you spoke to it a little bit, but how do you see it all playing together, and how do we affirm that at a time when life is so full of challenges and evidence to the contrary, that our Creator is ultimately good?
It was good. So again, looking at sort of the theological language that I like to play with. So the title itself of the book, By Bread Alone, comes from this story in two of the Gospels, the Gospel of Matthew and the Gospel of Luke. It's the story of the temptations of Jesus. And so Jesus kind of goes out into the desert. He's fast for 40 days, and the tempter comes to him and gives him a series of temptations, trying to help him, kind of like offering him basically power, this ability to kind of have power over the world. And one of the temptations he gives is turn these stones into bread. And Jesus's response is, one does not live by bread alone, but by every word that proceeds from the mouth of God. And I think it's easy to take that and say kind of this, like this physical world, this material world, it's hard, it's bad, we're hungry, it's like, you know, we just need to escape it and only think about kind of the spiritual realm or the mystical realm. But then when we look in another one of the Gospels, the Gospel of John, we have this really interesting play with kind of the word and the word bread. So the opening of the Gospel is, in the beginning was the Word, and the Word was with God, and the Word was God. So Jesus himself identifies himself as the Word. And then skipping ahead, Jesus also says, I am the bread of life, that he who comes to me will never go hungry. So Jesus is both the Word and the bread. He is the word that proceeds from the mouth of God, and then also the bread that we place in our own mouths so that we can know God on our tongues and in our bellies, when I think we don't even have, like, words can't capture the deep ache and hunger and longing that we experience. That I think, you know, when the world feels so overwhelming because it is, when God feels so far away because everything is aching, God has offered us this gift of bread. And I think that God is present with us in this deeply tangible way, in the bread that we consume, both kind of the bread that is offered in the, at the communion table, but also the bread that we share all throughout our lives, that that just the daily bread that we eat. I think God is sharing God's goodness with us in that food that we're eating.
Well, we're going to take a break right now, but when we come back, I want to continue to explore this with you by having you share some of the stories that you cover in the book, you know, some of the,
Yes.
your adventures and the
Yeah.
journey that you were on from working at Panera, and also, you know, all the different things that happened to you that led you, you know, through the ups and downs, the vicissitudes,
yeah.
you know, of life. But I think that what you just said about those two Bible quotes, it's interesting that, again, they complete themselves in each other. If man does not live by bread alone, but I am the bread of life,
yeah.
then basically man does live by bread alone.
Exactly.
If you understand
yes.
what bread is in a whole
yes.
different way.
Yes, that bread is so much more than just bread.
There you go.
Yes.
That's it. Bread is so much more than just bread. With that, let's take a break. Join us. We're going to come back in part two with Kendall Vanderslice. We're going to talk more about her new book, Buy Bread Alone. And we're going to hear more about some of the journey. You know, we always say the pizza quest is a journey of self-discovery through pizza. Today we're talking about that pizza quest is a journey of self-discovery through bread and bread alone. Be right back. This episode of Pizza Quest is brought to you by Central Milling, hand-selected grain, expertly milled for passionate bakers. Central Milling is the farmer, the miller, and the baker working together to preserve American farmland for tomorrow while providing the highest quality flour and grains for the bakers of today. Dating back over 150 years, Central Milling is built on generations of knowledge, and they know that premium flour starts at the source. Employee-owned, Central Milling works directly with their farmers to sustainably grow grains that have exceptional flavor, nutrient content, color, and baking performance, which results in one of the largest selections of premium specialty flour and grains in the country. Hand-selected for the highest baking qualities, milled, cracked, or blended slowly to minimize heat generation, then bake-tested for performance. Learn more about Central Milling and their products at centralmilling.com. We're back with Kendall Vanderslice talking about Buy Bread Alone, which we in part one, we kind of explored what that title means and the implications of it. But there's more to it than that, because you've lived, a life of journey. You've been on your own quest
yes.
for meaning and a quest for purpose. And those things don't happen, you know, just through meditation and thinking about it, imagination alone.
They happen through
literal
the
life that you've lived has led you through ups and downs. Can we talk a little bit about, you know, because you talk about longing, you talk about hunger. I mean, these are things that evoke, you know, challenges. Can you talk a little bit about the challenges that kind of propelled your journey?
Yeah. So for me, you know, I was a dancer growing up. I was a ballerina, so trained in classical ballet, which means that kind of growing up, my relationship to food was very, very strained, that food was something kind of to battle against. Food was something to, my hunger was something to suppress. Mm. And so my relationship to food was really, was just a really negative one, as much as I enjoyed it. And so when I quit ballet, bread suddenly became this thing that was, I was allowed to eat again.
Yeah.
And also the actual physicality of baking bread became kind of this thing that offered me, you know, one of the things I loved about dance so much was like, you just are so connected to your body, that you're kind of deeply inhabited in your body and the movements of your body. And baking bread felt very similar, that there's kind of this choreography to it, that your body has to know, like your mind can't fully understand what you're feeling, but somehow your body has to know, your nose has to know kind of these movements and changes that are happening in the bread. Right. And so bread became kind of this way of reconnecting to my body and a healthier relationship to food. after that experience kind of in the dance world. Yeah, but then I had a very strange kind of entry into professional baking. So,
How so?
most people I think either start in culinary school or in a restaurant, but I started on a ship in West Africa.
Oh, yeah.
Was my entry into baking as a job. So I took a gap year after high school to work for an organization called Mercy Ships. It's a hospital ship that operates off the coast of West Africa. And most kids who are doing a gap year to go there, it's because they want to go into a career in medicine in some way. And this is an interesting way to kind of experience, medicine in a very different context. But I wanted to bake, and so I went to the ship and I baked bread, or well, mostly actually cookies and muffins and those sorts of things. But we
That's a
had
tough
like
kitchen to work in a small kitchen on a ship.
Oh yeah, it was. I mean, I was well right off the bat. Everything was in, all of our like temperatures were in Celsius, and all of our like weights and measurements were metric measurements. So all of a sudden, as an 18-year-old who had only ever like baked in my home in the States, it was a huge learning curve of I had to teach myself how to kind of translate everything.
How many grams in a cup?
Yes, exactly. And then on top of that, we had like we would get two shipments a month of ingredients, one from the United States and one from the Netherlands. Everything else from that, it was what we could acquire, on shore. And at one point we were in this like 14-day sail from Cotonou, Benin up to the Canary Islands for the holidays. So everyone's wanting Christmas cookies. And we run out of butter, and we're in the middle of the Atlantic Ocean, and there's no way to get butter,
You
So I
can't milk
had
a
to,
cow on
you can't milk a cow on the
the
ocean, no. So I was tasked with kind of figuring out all of the different alternatives of what we could do to make Christmas cookies without butter. And so kind of my culinary education became these Google searches of like recipe alterations that we could make based on what we could get in these very strange environments. And that is what first got me really interested in kind of the chemistry of baking and thinking about
interesting.
how different ingredients work differently.
You mentioned that there was some of the ingredients came from the Dutch side,
Yes.
from and isn't van der Slice a Dutch name also? Wait, is there any Dutch
It
connection there?
is. So it is, as far as it is a very, very Americanized Dutch name. So as far as we're aware, kind of our closest Dutch relatives came to the United States in like the 17th century. So very little connection. I was very proud of my Dutch heritage. When I was on the ship, I had several Dutch friends, and I would tell them like, I have a Dutch background too. My name, Van der Slice. And they would kind of look at it. And then they would look at it again and they were like, I guess I could see how that,
But it went again. You talk about sort of searching for connection, and
Yes.
just to be able to connect with people through
Yeah.
your own heritage and name. It's a start. It's a start,
It is. It is.
who would have thought through cookies and butter, and then ultimately the
That all
bread.
these relationships would be formed. Yeah.
So you got off the ship. You had this gap year experience. Where did it take you then?
I went on to a small liberal arts college just outside of Chicago. And I was kind of not sure what I was doing there. I just wanted to work in the kitchen and was kind of like, why am I taking my time back in school? I just had this great experience where, we were very clearly helping people every single day. It felt almost selfish to be in school and just kind of exist, working in my mind. But in that time, I was diagnosed with something called PCOS, polycystic ovarian syndrome. This is a hormone disorder that about one in five women experience,
Really? Can
and it
you
affects
say it
our,
again? Say the name of that again.
polycystic ovarian syndrome, PCOS. So it's it affects kind of many different hormones, but one of the things that it does is it affects our body's ability to respond to insulin. And so a lot of women that have this end up pre-diabetic and eventually diabetic. And so I was, in this season of wanting to build a career in baking and pastry, and then suddenly was told, don't eat any sugar, don't eat any flour, don't eat, just don't eat carbs.
Carbs,
My entire career plan is built around, eating carbs, making carbs. So I went through a few years of trying to bake using all alternative ingredients. This was kind of before you were just starting to get to be able to buy gluten-free stuff in the grocery store. But like there were not there was very little. And so I was learning how to use different, almond flour, flax seeds, and different kinds of like black bean flour, peanut flour,
Right. Alternative
all
ingredients.
these alternative
Wheat.
ingredients, to wheat, and then also alternatives to sugar. I would use a lot of agave because, I was told it didn't impact your insulin quite as much. And so that became kind of the second phase of learning more about the chemistry of baking because suddenly, the things that I'm relying on, like I can't use. And so I have to learn how do all these different flours work and how do you make something good out of those? And so that was kind of my college years. But then I was studying anthropology, and became introduced to the anthropology of food as kind of a field and realized like my love of food doesn't just have to be something that's done in the kitchen. I can also study food in this kind of historical cultural sense and what food does. And so that was kind of the next step of my journey that really shaped, how I approach food.
So that kind of got you into gastronomical journey.
Yes,
And
yes.
did you end up going to Boston University
I did,
for that,
yes.
for gastronomy?
I
Or
did, yep, for
so,
gastronomy.
well, it makes perfect sense in terms of the journey, that would be the next step for you then.
Yes. Yeah, well, and that was even sort of accidental. I really thought that after college, I was going to go to culinary school. I was like, finally, I'm going to, do this, like take this next step, go to culinary school, start working in restaurants. And in that time, my parents moved to Boston. They had been living in St. Louis. They moved to Boston. I had told them, I'm an adult now. I'm not going to follow you wherever you go. And I went once to go visit them and fell in love with the city. I
It's a
was like,
great
Boston
city,
is so cool. So I ended up moving there. And then after moving there, I was registered for culinary school. I received an email that was kind of outlining what my student loan payment would be after graduating. And I completely panicked. And I realized, like, I can go to culinary school, but then I can't afford to work in the restaurant industry afterwards. And that, like,
That's a
ruins
dilemma for a lot of
everything.
culinary students.
And on that same day, I learned about the gastronomy program at Boston University, and I realized, overall, it was going to be cheaper than culinary school. It was going to be a little bit more spread out. I could work while I was doing it, and it fit. Like, I could take culinary classes, but also I could, take all of these other classes. And so, like the day before I was supposed to start culinary school, I called and withdrew and took a year working in the restaurant industry. I worked for a restaurant kind of near my parents' house, and the chef there really took me under his wing and just did an incredible job, training. And so then I started my work at Boston University a year later, and it was really the right fit for me.
Boston University is where I went to college also. So
Oh,
a number
I
of years before you. Yeah, I was in the
didn't know
film school there, the
that.
communication
Okay.
film. And they didn't have the gastronomy program. Then years later,
Yeah.
when I ended up back at Johnson & Wales University in Providence, we discovered that they had the gastronomy program there. And I thought, oh
Yes.
man, I wish I had known about that back, or I wish they had had it back then when I was there.
Yeah. It's a really cool program. I'm really grateful for it.
So that in a way kind of gets you more into an academic mode,
Yes.
again, connecting to food and to bread in particular, on another level than just the baking. But still, you were still baking
Absolutely.
also at the
Yes,
same
I was still
time.
baking. I was still baking. Yeah, so part of kind of some of what really led to some of these more questions, historical, cultural questions, where as I was working with these doctors, trying to figure out the best, diet for me to eat, all of their different recommendations seemed to conflict with one another. And so I was kind of then trying to understand, like, if we look back historically at how people have been eating, can that give us some insight into what might be like good for our bodies? And so at that time, I was determined to find out kind of what is the right way to eat, assumed like there was a one right way and I just needed to figure it out. And so I thought like if I explore historically, if I look kind of culturally, if I look like in the Bible, will I get sort of a sense of what is the right way to eat that's good for my body, that tastes good, that's good for the people who prepare food, that's good for kind of the earth and the actual farming and cooking process. So I was kind of on this quest to find like the right way to eat.
You were looking for the theory of everything.
I was, yes. And of course, in the end realized like it's a lot more complicated than that. That I think part of what drew me constantly back to this theological approach to food was that it provided us with this structure of holding together again this goodness and brokenness of creation, that there is no one right way to eat, that our food always does this really like it is good, it tastes good, it draws us together, and at the same time we always experience the ways that I would say like creation is broken, that the things are not as they're meant to be, that what is good will also carry with it some sort of like pain or harm in some capacity. And so instead I think we can look at how we can study how food builds community, how it tells stories, we can study the stories behind the foods, and we can see the beauty in food, and also we can see that reality of kind of that complexity of food at all times. And that actually, to me, is much more beautiful than just trying to kind of find this like one right way to eat. And so that is kind of how I wound up at Boston University. In this process, I did find some doctors who were able to help me sort of regulate my health in such a way that I was able to, bake bread again. But in that process is how kind of I discovered like sprouted wheat baking and, really got into these much longer fermentation baking. And that is what really pulled me specifically to bread, realizing like,
Amazingly parallel to what was going on in the bread world. It wasn't as all this knowledge was there before. It was coming, it was almost as if it was being developed as you needed it, like
Yes,
an
it really
escalator,
was.
making you
Yeah.
accept.
I mean, I remember seeing, so like when I was high school, when I was dancing, I was told to eat like the sprouted wheat, the Ezekiel 4:9 bread. That's kind of like the bread that I was allowed to eat at various times. So I had heard of the goodness of kind of sprouted grains, but I remember like it was my last year of undergrad that I found a bag of sprouted wheat flour at Whole Foods, and it was like I don't think it had existed before that time, really.
And when was this? Did you
This
say
would
the
have
past?
been 2012 or
Are you
2013.
living in Durham by then, or were you still
No,
somewhere else?
I was in the Chicago area at that time.
Because you're in Durham now, right? You
I
live in
am in
Durham,
Durham
because you
now.
ended up at Duke, but then there you are living now just a few miles from where that
Yeah,
sprout wheat is
where it all
being
happened.
milled at Lilly Mills,
Yes, I mean, I had no idea until I read your book on the sprouted wheat that Lindley had helped develop that process. And they're now great friends of mine, and I use their
Oh,
sprouted
good.
flowers all the time. And such
That's
a
awesome.
wild small world. Who would have thought that that journey would bring me back here?
Well, there's no coincidences in the world.
That's right.
Before we
That's
run out
right.
of time, though, so your dietary crisis, so to speak, this condition that you had, it was one crisis that forced you to
Yeah.
again adjust your life and break through. You took a challenge and turned it into a stepping stone. Can you tell us one
Yeah.
more sort of travail, so to speak,
Yeah, yeah.
another crisis that was a turning point for you?
Yeah.
That led you, because ultimately you've started something called Edible Theology, right?
Yeah.
EdibleTheology.com. But so what, how did
Yeah.
you, what else got you there? That had to be some more crises
So
moments.
yeah, there were multiple, but I think the biggest one that led to where I am now. So when I came down to Duke after I graduated from Duke with my MTS, I still wanted to keep baking, but I didn't feel like I could go back into kind of the restaurant world. I had a pretty difficult sort of end to my time working in the restaurant world, and I didn't want to go back into professional kitchens, but I wanted to bake. So I ran a community supported bakery,
There
CSA
you
style
go.
bakery. And I launched it kind of fall of 2019. The vision was that I would partner with churches as pickup spots, that I would bake their bread that they would use in communion, and then people would bring their bread home and eat that bread throughout the week. So it'd be kind of this theological like connection of the communion table to the kitchen table. But I would still be getting to actually bake bread, and then it would provide me kind of the time and the space to write as well. So I was like, this is like the perfect vision of all the things that I want to do held together. And then of course, a few months later, less than 6 months later, the pandemic hits. All these churches have closed down, so kind of my pickup spots have closed down. And so there was a period of time in the midst of the pandemic where it actually I got to bake a ton because people were wanting that connection, and this provided that sense of connection. And I was able to bake for a lot of food pantries in the area. That was really cool. And then, but as I think so many different businesses, especially as the pandemic wore on, it was like, how we can't keep pivoting. I'm hitting a point where my body is exhausted. my bank account is exhausted, that I cannot keep pivoting and I don't know what is next and what's going to come next. And then at the end of 2020, I lost access to my kitchen space, and it was kind of this like
Oh.
this thing that was exactly what I wanted. All of a sudden, I couldn't do it anymore, and it had felt so significant in that year, but also that year had made it kind of impossible to go on. And so at the end of 2020, I made the choice to close this CSA down. And I had kind of 2 months runway to figure out what was next. And I had this book in mind. I really wanted to write this book. I had kind of all these other curriculum in mind that I wanted to help other people sort of explore the role of food in scripture, in community, and help kind of build community around the table. And so I had a 2 month runway, and I was like, well, I'm going to write the first of this curriculum. It's a program called Bake with the Bible. It looks at, six different stories of bread in the Gospels, and we'll just see what happens. So I closed the bakery. A month later, I released this curriculum, and this edible theology just took off. And so
Is edible theology the platform through which that curriculum is made available to people?
it is, yes. So we are actually a nonprofit. So it's an educational nonprofit. And our vision is to help, people build community around the table. And so the curriculum, we now have two curriculum, Bake with the Bible, and one called Worship at the Table, that are meant for families or individuals or small groups to kind of go through together to think about how do we build better community through food.
So for people who want to follow up on this, go to edibletheology.com, correct? Is
Yes,
that
that's
the website?
it.
And also, you can read all about these various adventures that led Kendall on her own journey. I'll call it your journey of self-discovery through bread, in the new book By Bread Alone, which if I'm holding a copy, has it actually
Yeah.
come out as of
It
today?
released yesterday.
Yesterday.
Yesterday, February
I'm
28th.
doing this interview today on March 1st. So it came out on the last day of February, and it's now finally officially available, right, through
Yes.
Amazon or bookstores everywhere.
Amazon bookstores everywhere. Barnes and Noble should have it in store, but all
It's
over the place online.
really beautifully written book. It's
Oh,
full of
thank you.
wonderful, I think it's relatable stories. You're talking about your journey, but your journey parallels the journey of so many others. Nobody's had a life that's been free of, crises and travails and overcoming and
Absolutely.
ultimately, in a sense, transforming ourselves, through hardship, into breakthroughs. And so really, it's a book about, I think, in a lot of ways, about breakthroughs, about resilience, and about finding the light at the end of the tunnel, in a literal and metaphorical sense. So I thank you so much for writing it and for allowing me to participate and contribute to the book. It was an honor to even write, just a couple of pages, at
Oh,
the front of the
absolutely.
book.
It was
And
such an honor to have you write it. Thank you so much. As I'm sure you see in the pages, you contributed in so many other ways and the ways that your work has really shaped my thinking. So
I love seeing other people finding, commonality. In a way, we have something that's very, in common. It's a small community that of people that are both interested theologically and literally in bread, but it's growing community. And in fact, this is not the only book this year that's coming out on the similar subject. And so we're going to be seeing, I think, more people sharing, their journey stories. And I think that for anybody who's, yearning, and ultimately, I think longing and yearning, I think, are really powerful motives for all of us. Because what is it that we are longing for? It's something that's just always just out of reach, and yet within reach. And so, again, Kendall, thanks so much for writing the book, for sharing your story. And where does it go from here? You've got the curriculum and the website. Are you still baking? And are you baking for people?
Just for friends right now. I call it kind of Friday bread for friends, where
Right.
every now and then I'll email a handful of friends and say, "Here, I've got these loaves this week. Would you like some?" But yeah, I do have another book in the works that's more recipes, so also a lot of baking for
There
that.
are a few recipes in this book,
There
by the
are a
way.
few recipes in this one, but there will be many more in the next one.
Okay, well, let's end with one other thing. I want to ask you about strudel. Tell us about strudel.
Strudel is my beagle.
The
He is
beagle, yes,
Yes, I'm
strudel the
amazed.
beagle.
I am amazed that he has not contributed to this podcast at all. Oftentimes, we will hear him
I was
howling in
kind
the
of hoping he
background.
would make an appearance, at some point. I know my cat's on the other side of the door here wanting to come in,
Oh yeah. No, he's taken a nap. He's really lazy today. But Strudel is my dear, dear beagle. He loves bread a little bit too much, perhaps even more than me. He steals it off the counter all the time.
Really?
He's a very mischievous little
You have to
pup.
say, you have to tell, remind Strudel of the first part of the story, not by bread
Yes.
alone.
That's right.
And
That's right. You
he's going to
truly do
say,
not live by bread
but
alone,
it is
dog.
by bread alone. Kendall, it's been great talking with you and catching up and hearing about, how things are going for you and seeing the manifestation, of your first book and knowing now that you're working on a second book, which is even more fantastic. So can't wait to see that one.
Yeah,
Are
thank you so
you
much for
focusing
having
a
me.
lot on sprouted grains and things in that book?
No, that one is going to be looking more kind of, it's more a little bit historical, looking at different breads from different religious holidays kind of around the world and how they've developed.
Oh, it's like celebration breads and things like
Yeah.
that. Wow. Fantastic. Oh, wonderful. Well, good luck with all of that.
Thank you.
Let me know if when you get when you're ready to talk about it on air,
Absolutely.
we'll get you back and then say hello to the Lindleys. You're like you are. You're down the road from Lindley
I
Mills,
am.
which is where really one of the epicenters of the sprouted flower movement. And I'm glad that that all kind of came into your life when you needed it the most.
Oh,
So,
me too. Me too.
all right, Kendall. Kendall Vanderslice joining us today on Pizza Quest. She's been on a bread quest. Again, her book, Buy Bread Alone. It's Tyndale Press, and you can find it booksellers everywhere. And if your bookstore doesn't have it, ask them to order it for you. Kendall, thanks so much. Have a wonderful journey as it continues.
Thank you so much, Peter. You too.
Pizza Quest is powered by Simplecast. Thanks for listening to Heritage Radio Network, food radio supported by you. Keep in touch at heritageradionetwork.org/subscribe.